Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Buddy, this is the Writer's Lounge Show, and this is where we showcase new authors. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. A brief intro to today's show. Tonight we have on Jo Marie Lawson, and it's a very moving memoir titled It's My Story to Tell. And Jo Marie will be on with us at about 15 minutes past the hour, so if you are listening, stay tuned, as they say. Find us now. A little bit more about us. You can find us on Facebook, and you would search for The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriddell.net. That's thomasriddell.net. In the blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the blog page. I can't talk tonight for some reason, on the podcast page as well, or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge, or find us on Google search. You'll find us very easily there if you do a Google search for The Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at ThomasRiddell56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line, and we will get back to you. Special note, we can now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. And I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike. And I also review books on both sites as well. Upcoming authors on The Writer's Lounge, in 2 weeks from tonight, author Lee Parker will be here with Letters to a Future Nurse. We will discuss the lives and careers of a nurse and the letters from families who have experienced the people who have devoted their lives to this very noble profession. On March 20th, 2023, author Evelyn Puerto will be here with her book Flight of the Spark, the beginning of a dystopian series that is filled with love, adventure, and suspense. This one is getting great reviews, and so I hope you'll tune in. to these exciting upcoming shows. And now, as we normally do on our broadcast, we go to the next subject or the next segment of our show, and that would be Writer's Topics. And this is where I introduce my fabulous, wonderful co-host, Terry Brown. And with opening up the doors, here she comes running over to the seat to join me, and she's all excited because a lot of things are happening in her life. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing today, Tom?
I'm doing great. I'm really doing great. But I've been very busy today, and I know you have been too. Why don't you tell us about, you said something to me just not too long ago about being frugal, where you like to go to the Dollar General stores.
Yeah, I'm going to the Dollar Tree, and it really irritated me today because, I mean, I knew that they'd already done it, but somehow going to a place called the Dollar Tree and having to spend a dollar and a quarter just really ticked me off, but that's okay.
And I guess the backstory to this is, even though you're a very successful author, some would think, well, you've got to be rolling in the money at this point. It's not necessarily true of best-selling authors, even when you get up there on the list high. Unless you're somebody like Stephen King, then you're making millions. But you're not quite there yet, Terry.
No. For most of us, yeah, we're still headed over to the Dollar Tree. Yeah, that's
right. Right. So, you know, if you're going to sit down and write a bestseller, folks, just know that I guess the moral of the story would be you have to love to write. You have to love the subject matter of what you're writing about and just enjoy the ride. And I know, Terry, you have done that very well in your your first two books. And you're only a couple months out from your first novel. And that's doing very well. And I hear that you have just passed, what is it? How many awards for that book? Sunflowers Beneath the Snow?
So today it just got its 10th award. It's a finalist in the 2022 Wishing Shelf Book Awards. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know. And I just, it's so crazy. And I sent something to my publisher today that just said, you know, I'm enjoying the ride. I am having so much fun. I hope every author feels as excited as I am. And like, I wake up every day and there's something new, big, small, doesn't matter. Somebody has said something or posted something or whatever. And every day to me is exciting. So I love it. I'm having a great time.
It's sort of a segue into our subject matter of our writer's topics, which would be marketing. And I have got to say that I have some really good reviews on my book, Poppy's Prison. And the reviews that I've gotten, they've all been 5 stars. So I'm very happy about that. Yet I've done very little marketing. I haven't really devoted enough time to doing all that. And I'm really excited to learn, I don't know if you want to call it a secret. What's your secret, Terry, about marketing? What is it that you have to do? And I know we could talk an entire show or more about this, but in probably, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes, let's talk about marketing. What is it that you do that has done so well for you in that aspect?
I think that the first thing you have to do is figure out what feels comfortable for you, because there's a lot of different ways you can market. You know, you can, one of the things that works really well for me is getting on podcasts. And that's because I really enjoy chatting and I'm excited about it. And I think it shows in my voice and it's just a really good avenue for me. For some people, I talked with a group of ladies the other day, and one of the ladies said, oh, the idea of a podcast makes me nauseous. And my first thought was, boy, you need to change your opinion because they're not bad, but the point is you have to kind of find those things where you feel comfortable, and then you have to do it. You just have to work it and work it and work it.
Right. In relation to that, Terry, Our author tonight, Jill Marie, has, you know, kept in touch with me over the last couple of weeks as we get ready to do her show tonight. And she indicated to me early on when she requested to be on the show, she had sent me an email, and this really shocked me. And I haven't mentioned this to you, and I meant to, but it plays right in what you're saying tonight, is she told me that she had made requests to be on other podcasts. And get this, I don't know if you're doing it, but this is what she told me. And I don't know if, you know, how many shows she requested to be on or how many podcasts she wanted to be on, but she had told me that they wanted her to spend upwards of $1,500 or more just to be on a podcast. Have you run into anything like that?
So I've run into a few, and I absolutely refuse to be part of that. I'm not paying to be a guest on their show. Absolutely not. I have, on occasion, paid up to $20, knowing that the show that I'm going on has a platform that this person's paying for and hasn't figured out a way to break even yet. And if I think that it's a good fit for me, and I've only done it for, a handful. I've been on over 6 podcasts with just Sunflower.
I
maybe paid, let's see, I think I paid $25 3 times.
Wow. And you keep popping up
in
my
timeline. And I'm willing, well, I'm willing to do that if I understand the purpose behind it. There was one that I did it for, and the money that you did was donated to an organization that they were, you know, and it was like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. But I did have one, and they gave me, you know, all the reasons why I needed to be on their show and spend $2,500 to do so.
Oh, my God.
And it was like, no, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I got to let everybody know out there that if you are listening to and the other thing is we call this the show because that's what it was early on, and I've never been able to adapt to calling it a podcast, but I guess it is. But the only difference is a lot of podcasts don't have live air, and we do it live every 2 weeks so people can call in. And but I wanted to say that if you are listening and you are an author out there, please know that the Writer's Lounge Showcasing New Authors is free of charge. And in regards to marketing, all of our authors are encouraged to share the episodes after the broadcast. We do very little after the broadcast. Up until the broadcast, we promote the show, but we don't do a lot after. We kind of just hand it off to the authors because I always believe that it's not our show, Terry. It's the author's show. And so we hand it off to them. We hand it off to them to do whatever they want to do. And I know I'm talking a little bit too much here. I wanted to get more into marketing. Maybe we can save some for another show. But I just got to let you know that whatever you're doing is phenomenal because your listening numbers on the Blog Talk Radio, this show is off the charts. The listens
fantastic
that you have gotten has been phenomenal. I think close to 200 listens in the last 2 weeks. And that is off the charts. I mean, we usually do pretty good. But again, it's up to the author to promote their show and to share the show after they're done with their show. And again, it's their show.
One of the things that I think that authors really need to understand is you can write, but if you don't market, no one is going to know you exist. But you can market, and if you don't write, you're not going to have anything to market. And so to be an author, you really have to do both. I think for me, it's about 80% writing, 20% marketing. But when I first started those first few months when I had nothing in place and I didn't know how to do anything, it was more like 90% marketing and 10% writing. But now that it's kind of moving and I know what I want to do and how I want to do it, I spend maybe somewhere between 10 and 30 minutes on marketing every day, and then I go about doing everything else.
Wow. Okay. That's really good information, because I'm going to learn from you as well, because I need to do more of that with my book, and I haven't had the time to do it. I do a lot of reading and reviewing, and I set the show up, and I do all that. So, you know, I don't have a lot of time in my day, plus I'm a gamer too, so I got to get my games in and do that too. So so I don't have a lot of time to do those ridiculous things like marketing. I thought it was just, yeah, I'm an author. I don't need to market my book, for God's sake. You know, so anyway, let's get on to the main event. And our main event today is author Jo Marie Lawson, and she wrote It's My Story to Tell. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening in, and I do believe there are listeners out there listening, and you could call us and talk to Jo Marie. And the number, the area code is 914-219-0868. Once again, that's 914-219-0868. And go ahead and get in your call if you'd like to talk to her. We promise we do not bite. Do not be shy. We're really comfortable here. I never had anybody on our show that felt nervous, at least after they've been on the show. Beforehand, yeah, they tell me all the time I'm nervous. I don't know what to do with myself. But coming from somebody like myself who is, I got stage fright. And here I am doing radio shows all the time. So, but anyways, my review of It's My Story to Tell. It's My Story to Tell is a story of conscience, courage, and a devout faith in God to reveal a secret so disturbing that it could threaten the very foundation of a family. But this is also a call to arms to address childhood sexual abuse that many children in America are facing at this very moment in time. The author opens up in this raw and thought-provoking memoir to recount a time in her childhood when she was sworn to secrecy to not reveal several incidents of inappropriate behavior within her family, a family that demanded to project an image of perfection. The person who abused her was someone that she loved and trusted to protect her. The author details her journey through those times in her childhood, and does it at the risk of causing more pain and separation in her family. But she does it to remind readers that secrets like the one she kept for years can destroy life and prevent healing from starting. There are millions of adult survivors of child sexual abuse that have never told their story. Jo Marie Lawson hopes that her memoir will inspire and encourage others to do exactly what she has done, tell their story, and to set themselves free. This memoir was a short 2-hour read for me, but it's 2 hours that was very well spent. I would highly advise anyone who has been impacted by childhood sexual abuse to read this. It will touch you deeply, and it could save and change your life forever. Author Jo Marie Lawson has a great command of her communication skills as she courageously and effectively tells a story that lays out the raw truth in a way that, frankly, I have never experienced in a memoir before. This is a story I will never forget. I applaud Lawson for breaking the veil of silence and for her talented skills as a writer. And now it is our pleasure to welcome Jo Marie Lawson to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And I will open up the door here and invite her in to our make-believe studio. And Jo Marie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Well,
hi,
hello.
Tom.
How are you?
I'm good. And Perry as well. I'm doing good.
Yeah, hi.
Yes. And where are you calling from tonight?
I'm calling from Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, okay. I've been down through those neck of the woods. And is that where you're calling home now?
Yes, actually it is. Within the last 6 months or so, I relocated to Wilmington, Delaware from Charlotte, North Carolina,
okay,
to be near my grandchildren.
Oh,
so I moved up here to be near my daughters are up here, and I have 5 grandchildren now between the two
wow.
of them.
Wow.
Five, under the age of five.
Yes, God bless you.
That's a fun age. Oh, I love that. I'm glad you're able to.
It really is. It really is. And I am so glad that I was able to be able to get up here and be near them. But it is such a fun age. They keep
very good.
But I do regret that you had to move from North Carolina. That's where I live, and it's a wonderful place.
I know. But I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. So I had only been in North Carolina about 10 years. So coming back
up
north
wasn't
totally unusual.
Yeah, you were in Charlotte, too, not near the beach like I am. That might have changed your mind a little.
Right, exactly. That probably would have made it a little more difficult.
A little harder, yeah.
Yes,
so,
definitely.
So, Joe Marie, you wrote a very moving, courageous memoir here. Tell us about yourself and what inspired you to write it.
Okay. I, as I told you, am a mother, wife, of two daughters that have, between the two of them, given me five grandchildren. I've been married to my wonderful husband, Mark, for 40 years this year. I'm the oldest of five siblings, grew up in a blended family, what I speak to in the book as a dysfunctional blended family, but grew up in a blended family in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My mother remarried my stepfather when I was 6 years old, and my brother right underneath me, he was three or four, and then there were three other children that they had together. So my brother and I were like stepchildren to my stepdad, and so we lived in Pittsburgh, and I am now 62 years old, but for 50 plus years, I've never, ever told this story except to my husband. I hadn't really told anyone what happened when I was six. This abuse probably occurred for 3 to 4 years over the age of 8 to 12 before it was exposed. And I had never mentioned it because I was sworn to secrecy, and we grew up in that era, as I have found a lot of families did, with the mantra that ran through your home of what goes on in this house stays in this house, and it's not anybody else's business, and you don't air your dirty laundry out in public. And so once it was exposed, I just was basically scared into never talking about it again. Not only did I never talk about it again, neither did anyone else. I mean, when I say anyone else, I'm talking about my mother nor my stepfather. It was never discussed. It's as if, I often say, Tom, that it's as if it didn't even occur. If I didn't think I was crazy, yes. I would think that yes. It didn't even happen. I mean, that's how ignored it was after I exposed it. And so I went on through life without never having told anyone, hiding behind this secret the entire time, showing up as if everything was fine, as if I were okay when I wasn't. And I went through my entire life like that. My mother passed away in 2012, and I think having, you know, gone back and looked at this, because I've been asked this question several times, like, why now? Many people have asked me that question, and I have even asked myself that question while I was writing it, like, why now after all this time? And I think that it was a combination of things. Her passing away, she had been ill for many years before that. So while I wanted to bring the subject back up as I got grown, I couldn't, because I really didn't feel like she would have been able to handle it. She was ill intermittently off and on for a good 17 to 20 years before she actually passed away.
Wow.
So her passing away in 2012, shortly after that, both of my daughters got married and started their families in 2014 and 2016. And then the birth of my first grandchild was 2018. So in that 3 to 5 year span, I found myself going through a transition of unhappiness, loneliness. It was a combination of the ending of one generation and the starting of another, coupled with my daughters both leaving, you know, in quotations, but, you know, going and getting married shortly after starting their own families that left me with a sense of, okay, so what is my next?
Right.
I felt like a fish out of water. Like I had taken care of mom for so long. I had taken care of my daughters for so long. I just felt like a fish out of water. And so loneliness crept in. I say in the book that I felt a lot of times feeling of rejection and abandonment growing up because of how the secret was kept so quiet and basically ignored. That same feeling, that familiar feeling of rejection and abandonment came flooding back in to my life like a flood. I mean, it was at that time that I decided that maybe I need to go talk to somebody. So for the first time in my life, I went to therapy. And it was the best thing that I could have ever done.
Yes, yes. I can relate to that because I had gone through severe depression in the early 90s, and I went through group therapy for 3 years, and I absolutely loved it. I didn't want to leave. In fact, I had a fight with my psychiatrist over going to college or staying in the group. I needed to go to college. I wanted to do both, but she said you can only choose one, so I chose college. And then I was out of the group. But I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot about myself. It's sort of like an instruction manual you have, like for your car, where you can go in and learn about what makes you tick. And I find it very interesting. But the other thing that's really intrigued me, Jo-Marie, was, you know, you look at these old family photos and everyone seems so happy in those moments, the smiles and the togetherness. Just a snapshot in time. But as you mentioned in your memoir, families are able to put on happy faces at family events, but the reality is it can be anything but happy behind those smiles. Can you talk to us about, you know, a few of those times when you went from, when you had to put on that happy face, and what was that like for you?
Well, that's a good question. That's a great question, actually. I lived the better part of my life with that happy face on. And when you speak to pictures and it looks like everybody is happy in the pictures, in reality, everybody was in the pictures that you would see of my family. I grew up in a family where perfection was an image that we had to keep up. And so in the pictures that you saw, it would appear to the outward eye that everybody was happy. And to be honest with you, everybody was, except for me, because of what I knew had happened to me, but no one else knew it, not even my sisters and brothers. So the only ones in those in that family picture that you're speaking of, the only one that even knew that anything was awry in our household behind those closed doors was myself, my stepfather, and my mother, and that's it. And so because the overall image was one of perfection, it was easy for them to just sweep it under the rug, and if we don't talk about it, maybe it didn't happen, never disclose it to my sisters and brothers. I wasn't allowed to do so, and neither did my parents do so. So they grew up with the same false feeling that everything in this house is perfect. We are a perfect family, and we had some imperfections, of course, all families have them, but you know what I mean, like the overall look. So when I finally started telling my story or letting people know who have known me my whole life about the book that I was getting ready to write, they were literally in shock because they knew my family. And they watched us and couldn't believe that this was actually going on in the background. But nothing was really going on because, as I said, it was never talked about. And it was never discussed after it was discussed. So nothing was really going on with anybody except inside my head.
Right. But, you know, what's interesting, Jemarie, is I had I lived in an emotionally abusive relationship for 14 years. And the emotional abuse was against me mostly, a little against my children, who were not the children of this man. And, you know, I did my very best to protect them, but all of our pictures look happy because I didn't want anyone to know.
Exactly.
There's that part that's like, you just want to keep it secret. It's embarrassing somehow. It makes you less than. And so you just do that whole, you know, we're just going to keep this, you know, on the lowdown. And I did things like really, really limited friendships, really limited how many people came into our home. And when they were there, worked really hard to make sure that everything was just so and that nothing would set him off, because I didn't want anyone else to see it. Yeah, it was really, when I read these kinds of things, I feel, I mean, I was never sexually abused as a child, but I understand some of those thought patterns and things of, you know, like keeping it quiet and just pretending it doesn't exist and maybe it'll go away and all of those things.
Right. And it's so interesting that you would bring that up, Terry, because what I did learn about myself in the, during therapy, what I did learn about myself is that what you just described was manipulation and control. Because I lost control as a child, during the abusive phase, I didn't feel as though I was in control. I definitely didn't feel as though I was in control after I told the truth and experienced rejection and abandonment. I felt like I needed to control my environment because that was all that I had. So growing up, what happened, unbeknownst to me, after therapy I learned, is that I became a master manipulator. Because I didn't or couldn't have control as a child, I developed the sense of I must control everything that is around me. And so I had to smile when I didn't want to smile. I had to show up and fake like everything was okay when it wasn't. I had to be in control of what was happening to me once I got to the age and stage of my life when I could control it. I took control. So in my research during the writing of my memoir, I found out that a lot of people who have experienced abuse, be it emotional abuse, sexual abuse, even as, you know, older or as a child, have that same feeling. These are people who don't tell their story and never really talk about it. And so they end up being excelling in what they do. They end up being leaders. They end up being in charge of things at work. They end up being the ones that are overachievers more or less because they have to control their environment because they couldn't control their environment before. And they don't want anybody else to know what was going on. So they had to be in charge of it.
Right.
I never realized that about myself.
Right.
I used to always call or refer to my mother as being the manipulator. And, you know, I'm never going to be like that. I'm going to do everything opposite of that. You know, I had two daughters, and I was determined that I was not going to manipulate them. Here, I ended up totally manipulating and controlling their entire lives.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until they were grown, married, and had children of their own that the truth of that fact ever even came out.
Yeah, Joe.
Right. And that's just interesting that you would say that you did the basically what you were doing was manipulating your environment.
Right. Yes.
Right.
And I think the other thing is that this cycle seems to continue. Even though you try to break it, for some reason or another, you latch on to behaviors that really continues. I won't call it bad behavior because it just happens to be how you're coping and how you're dealing with it in the aftermath. You're trying to do things right, but in trying to do things right, you end up falling into this pattern that it just continues on in generation after generation, which I find very fascinating, and it doesn't really break it. You know, you can make it better, but those, some of those same behaviors are still there. But anyways, it's ironic, Joe Marie, that on our next show, we will be focusing on nurses, and you are a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share your story of how you decided that you wanted to be a nurse? Because that was a very good part of your book. If you don't want to go into much detail and let others read your book, that's fine. But can you mention that part of it just a little bit?
Well, I went into nurse as a young child, probably the age of, at the age of six, I had an experience where I ended up in the hospital. And while in the hospital, the nurse that took care of me, it was a very traumatic experience. She was, in my young mind's eye, very mean, very cold. My mother was not in the room. She wasn't anywhere. The more I yelled out and cried, the more this woman basically told me that she was going to teach me a lesson and that that's why I was here. And it was just a very, very traumatic experience that I remembered. And it was through that experience as I grew up, again, not having, even back then, at 6 years old, not being able to be in control. As I grew up, I decided that I was going to go into nursing. I'm going to take care of people because of the way that this woman, or the impression,
right,
the negative impression that this woman left on me, let me know that I was going to go and be that person to make others feel better. And
you
make others,
that happen to anyone else.
So
no,
it
was,
essence,
and it was almost
really,
like obsessive.
And you kind of really broke the cycle there in that one, because you saw a bad behavior and decided, this isn't going to be the way I go forward. I'm going to do something good, and I'm not going to be like that nurse.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly what happened, and I was adamant, and I, probably to a fault at times, even now, all these years later, I'm like that advocate person, like, no, that's not going to happen when it comes to, like, health care. You know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to allow that to happen. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's not so good. But I think that it stems from way back there.
Yes.
Way back with what happened to me that made me go into that. But yes, I have been a nurse for 37 years.
Wow. Very good.
So I've been doing this for a long time.
Terry, you got the next question.
Yeah, so I'm curious, during the writing process, did you struggle with what you were going to put into the book? And then as you were doing that, like, was it difficult? And do you have any regrets? And looking back now, it's printed and it's out there. Is there anything that you would have done differently?
That's a great question. I won't say that I had any difficulty in writing it. Because if anybody knows me, I have been a journaler. Like, I love to journal, and I love to write, and I always have loved to write, and I've always been a reader as well. So I've loved to read and write. It wasn't difficult to write it down because I basically had been journaling about it all of my life. So remember way back, Terry, I bet you could relate to this. Way back, we used to have diaries. Oh, yeah.
Had like a little,
oh, yeah.
They had like a little key to them.
Yes. Wait a minute. Now, don't leave me out of this one because I remember getting those. I got those for Christmas, those little diaries with the little locks on them. And they only
I used to get a...
Yeah, they only gave you like four lines to write down. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't condense what was happening to me in four lines for one day. I just gave up on it.
Oh, I just ignored the little dates and wrote right over them.
Right over them, right. Whatever I had to say, I don't care how many pages it took. But the reason that I pointed it out to Terry like that is because my remembrance of it is mine was always pink. I always got a new pink one every December to start fresh in January. But anyway, that started me with journaling. So I have been writing my entire life. So writing it was not difficult, in answer to your question. Putting it down wasn't difficult. Wondering what I was going to put in the order in which it occurred was not difficult because all of that was still fresh in my mind. I had been going over it off and on for like intermittently for like 50 years. What became difficult was talking to my siblings. Because
I can imagine. Yeah.
Because we're all grown now. We're all, you know, and they never knew. They had no idea. But I didn't feel like I could go forth with the book without having a conversation with them. So that was a struggle.
Because people know you, therefore they know your family. And if you're telling your story, you probably kind of need to let them in on it, given that it's part of their story too, right?
It's part of their story too, even though they didn't know it. So that part was difficult. I would think that part was probably the most difficult part of writing the book. Now, as far as regrets, there are some things. Overall, no, I have no regrets. I think it was the best thing that I could have ever done. I've released something within me that had just been there forever, and it's a wonderful thing. So I don't have any regrets in that way. I do wish that I could have, and maybe will one day in part two, expand a little bit further on the chapters.
Okay.
I feel like it was shortened and cut some, but for the people that read it, they're saying that they totally get everything that was said and it was strategically put in there. And so I guess it's okay. But if I had any regrets, that would be the only one to make the chapters a little bit longer.
Very good. You had mentioned about your family reactions, and I'm just curious, how strong were those reactions and how did you cope with that? Did you experience anything that was surprising in how they reacted, and how do you deal with something like that? And I guess it goes right to the actual abuser, and how was that person, how did that person react to your book?
Well, initially it was a shock. It was a shock to everybody. As I said earlier, even to people who weren't my family members but knew my family, when I basically told them that I was telling the story and what it was about, the initial reaction was a shock to everybody. The reaction that I got from my siblings was expected. I can't say that I'm the oldest of five. So it was four separate conversations that I had. I didn't sit them all down together and have a group conversation. I did the conversations one-on-one. The response that I received from them was expected and did not come across as a shock. Initially, they couldn't believe it and wanted to know why now, why are we telling the story, you know, and once I explained to them my need to be able to do this and be able to tell the truth and get it out there, they were okay with that. As for my stepfather, who was the perpetrator, I don't think he took too well to it. Of course, he knew about it.
I can't imagine he did. Yeah.
Exactly. So he was not happy. He didn't see the reason for it to be released after all of these years. He didn't see the need to tell anybody. He'd apologized for it, and we had moved on, so he did not know why I was doing it. But, again, I explained my story. I have totally forgiven my stepfather. As I said in the book, and you referred to in your review, that I am a woman of faith. And I could not have continued to live my life in that house and going forward these 50-plus years later without forgiving him, without finding a place and way in which I could forgive him. And so with that forgiveness, I made it very clear to him that this has nothing to do with revenge, that I'm not writing this out of anger. I'm not trying to get back at him, but that this is something for my healing journey that I need to take control of in order for me to move forward. And I'm sorry if that affects him in that way, but I need to do this for me. And I think after I said that, and after the realization really hit, like this is really happening, I think that everybody settled down and we're okay. Not okay, but we're more accepting of it. So we're not like mad at each other and not speaking to each other or anything.
Right. People have been able to move forward from this point. So that's good.
Yes. Right, right. Yeah. But it was difficult in the beginning.
Are you and imagine. Your stepfather still in a decent relationship?
Yes, my stepfather is very much a part of my life. What the writing of the book did for me, what it released me from was the obligation to act as if everything was okay when it wasn't. And so for all of those years, I showed up with a smile on my face. You know, I did birthday parties, Father's Days, you know, you name it. I was the one that held it all together for me and for the whole family. And what the writing of this book has done for me, it has released me from the obligation to do that. I will show up, but I don't feel like I have to show up. And I don't feel like I have to be there and have to, like, take control of the situation and make sure that everybody is okay. It allows
right.
me to start taking care of Joni.
Right.
And,
I was going to say, Joni, back to God and your relationship to him, you mentioned in your book about assigned purpose, which I found very interesting. Can you explain further? And you wrote in your book, life is lived looking forward, but it is only truly understood when we look backward. Is there ever too much of looking back to our past as in maybe trying to fix a problem that ultimately can't be fixed because someone won't take full responsibility for their behaviors?
No, I don't believe that there is. I don't believe. I think that you do live life moving forward, and you can look back, but you personally cannot be responsible for the reaction or lack thereof of other people. And so at some point and in some way in your life, you must take control and be able to move forward independent and irrespective of what that person did or did not do behind you to get you to the point of where you are. You have to take ownership. In the book, I said, and what you made reference to, was that I believe that each one of us has an assignment here on earth, this side of heaven. And I believe that there are people who are assigned to us or something that is assigned to us that we are responsible to do, and you we can't strategically make that happen if we are holding on to a whole lot of things ourselves. So in order to be free, in order to be free or experience freedom, you have to be able to release that which is holding you back. Once you're able to release it, then you are able to freely be used by God to fulfill the assignment for which you were placed here for. And there are people waiting for you to step into that place. I really believe that.
Oh, I believe it too. 100%.
Yes.
So I have a question for you. If a child came to you, opened up about being abused, what advice would you give to that child?
I would tell that child that she had to tell her story. I would encourage that child. I first would love that child with all of my heart. I would love that child with all of my heart and let her know or him know that what happened was not their fault. And I would encourage that child. I would get that child some help. And encourage that child to not hold that inside and to not keep it, because like I did for 50-plus years, it single-handedly shaped every part of my life. And everything that I did by keeping that secret is a result of keeping that secret, and it's not good. And it's not good. I would let her know that it's okay to not be okay with what happened to her, and that she's a child or he's a child. I keep on saying she, but I need
to
stress.
Because that's your experience, and that's why that comes out that way. But
yes,
you're right,
absolutely.
Because it can be a little boy. It can be a little boy.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be a little girl, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Go ahead.
In my statistical research, I found that 1 in 4 little girls and 1 in 6 boys have been inappropriately touched in some form or fashion before the age of 17.
Oh, that's
so
bad.
That's one in 10 children.
Right.
And the average age of this infraction is 9 to 9.5 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you said
you would
get the child help. What resources?
Absolutely.
What resources do you share in regards to this sexual abuse? Like, where would you send someone to start finding that help?
Well, depending on where they live, I mean, there are national organizations out here because, like I said in my book as well, this is a global crisis of pandemic proportions. But there are local groups as well as national groups. There's a National Child Abuse Hotline, American Society of Positive Care of Children. There are cyber tip lines. There's a group called Darkness to Light that encourages and undertakes the counseling of children who are exposing these things that are happening. There's a National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. There's Justice for Children, Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. There's quite a few organizations that would be national children's advocacy centers to help anyone who is experiencing or knows of someone who is experiencing this infraction, this
very
atrocity,
good.
I call it.
Yeah, I think it's very important, too, with a young child, especially the younger that they are, that they need that support behind them to be able to, as you say, tell their story. Because I can just imagine the trauma that child's going through, such as your own experience, to wonder whether what I'm feeling or what I'm experiencing here by the abuse is good or it's bad, because sometimes I think children don't understand what's bad. They have to be coached, or they have to be able to find somebody that they can trust, especially trust, in order for them to get that story out and to get them help, which they they really need. Well, anyways, Joe Marie, we're getting close to about 5 minutes left here. And as we normally say on the Writer's Lounge, we'd like you to know that this would be your Oscar moment regarding your book. Any parting any parting words of advice, or is there anything more you'd like to share with us? And who would you like to thank for the successes you've had with the book or in life itself?
Okay, my Oscar moment. That's nice. Thank you.
Your Oscar moment.
I appreciate it.
We can't give you a statue. The statue doesn't come with this, but make-believe. We're all about make-believe here, right, Terry?
That's right.
So I would say to someone who listened, and foremost, thank you. Thank you for the support. Thank you, too, for allowing me this opportunity. I hope that by the hearing about my story and the releasing of my story, I hope that this experience will encourage others to feel free enough to do the same, because this atrocity that is going on is a global crisis of pandemic proportions greater than 40 million adults have suffered through, and most of which have never told their story. And I believe that our lives, in the words of the late Martin Luther King Jr., our lives begin to end the day that we become silent about the things that matter. And it is our responsibility to let our children know that they matter. It's very important that we know that we matter and that it is necessary for us to tell this story. I'd like to thank my husband, who for 40 years has known this story. He's the only one who has. I'd like to thank him for always being there for me and understanding the frustration that I felt after family meetings. I want to thank my daughters for encouraging me to come forward with this story once they were made aware of it and supporting me through it. And I want to thank my siblings for understanding. And that would be it.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. God bless you. This is a very riveting story that you tell. I would encourage everyone out there to pick up a copy of your book. And with that, we're going to say goodbye, but keep in touch with us. I will keep in touch with you because you have touched me greatly. I could talk more about some of the things that you related to that I had to deal with, not sexual abuse as a child, but there were other people in my life who were, they were sexually abused as a child. My ex-wife was one who ended up dying because of it. And it impacted me greatly. So I thank you again, Joe Marie. And I'm sure that Terry also sends your much success in your future.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Can I encourage people where to get the book?
Oh,
sure,
absolutely.
Okay. You can get the book off of Amazon.com. You can get the book on Barnes & Noble. And I would also encourage all of the people who are listening to please visit my website at www.joemariespeaksnow.com. That is www.joemariespeaksnow.com. Please visit the website. You can order the books on there and find out where I am going to be speaking in future events. I would love for you to subscribe to my webpage as well so that I can keep you abreast of what's going on with me.
Thank you so much, Joe Marie.
Again. Thank you again.
Have a wonderful night. Yep. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
And as I said, Terry, that was very riveting to have her on. I'm glad we got the message. And we don't have much time here, so we're going to scoot on to our next show. Author Lee Leah Parker will be here to talk Letters to a Future Nurse. We will discuss the lives and careers of a nurse and the letters from families who have experienced the people who have devoted their lives to this very noble profession. And Jo Marie Lawson was one of those people, as she just talked about a little bit about her being a nurse. And so, Terry, any quick parting words?
No, just that it was, I thought it was another great episode. I'm so glad that we got to speak with Jo Marie, and I'm really excited because she and I have connected on some social media, and I think we're going to, I've made so many friends on this show. It's fantastic. I'm loving it. Thank you for having me as a co-host.
Yeah, and thank you for being my friend, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Until then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen in the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and have a good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot.